What are three ways not to change? Even though we keep hearing that these things lead to change, the reality is they don't. What are they? Stay tuned.
If your desire is to become spiritually stronger, emotionally healthier, and relationally smarter, you're at the right place. Speaker and writer Stephanie Smith inspires and equips you to achieve these three key aims. If you're a parent, you also learn how to raise empowered kids ready for adulthood. Let's get started.
Welcome back, my friend. I am delighted that you are here. You know, we are coming up on almost getting close to the 200th episode of the Life's Key 3 podcast. Now, I don't know what the current statistics are. I know at one time for all of the millions of podcasts that there were in the world, most podcasts only made it like up to 4 episodes or maybe 10. Now, I don't think that's still the case, but I know that most do not get anywhere close to their 179th episode, which is what I am releasing today. And as I am releasing this, when this episode originally airs, here in much of the United States and other temperate climates around the world, it is fall. It is autumn. And even though I like the word autumn better, I understand we also call it fall. And I don't know technically if this is the reason why, but I'm just going to go with it. It's kind of the commonly accepted reason. It is because the deciduous trees begin to change and their leaves begin to fall. The sap that runs up through that tree and out and through the branches and then the twigs and then into the leaves begins to dry up. And as a result of that, those leaves begin to die. They change colors, sometimes beautifully, and sometimes they just kind of go brown overnight. And then they fall from the tree. And I seem to have a knack for showing up at these places around the country that are full of just all kinds of deciduous trees where there are going to be these golden yellows and these flaming oranges and these bright reds. And I just have a way of showing up there either about 10 days before the leaves change into these glorious colors or about 10 days after the last ones have changed and fallen off. So I'm going to have to correct that one of these years and actually go during what's called peak season. Well, change is not just for trees. It is for us as human beings. And in this life, you are always either growing or you are regressing. There is no neutral in life. Hopefully you have a neutral shift in your car. You don't get one in your life. Even though sometimes we talk about coasting, we never really are just coasting along in neutral. We're either growing or we are not growing. And that is just not good. The problem is that a lot of times we don't really experience the results of our growth or lack thereof for a long time, sometimes decades between the decisions that we're making and when the chickens come home to roost, as the expression goes. Well, we need to be intentional to be people who are assessing, what do we want to change? Now, this isn't to be done in some state of paranoia and fear, and we don't want to become like hamsters on a wheel where we're just running from one change to the other without any rhyme or reason to it. But for every person that has that problem, I think there's a whole lot more who have the problem of not being intentional about growth and about change. And so change does happen, but it happens by default. And that is seldom good. Doesn't make it awful and terrible and like, oh, life's going to end, but it doesn't usually turn out too well. So I'm going to start a little mini series talking about change. And today I'm going to share with you three ways not to change. Whether this is for you or if you are surrounded by other people, maybe you have kids that you're trying to parent. Maybe you have a spouse. You have colleagues, you have coworkers, you have friends, and you're around other people who are trying to change or you wish were trying to change. And there are three very common misconceptions. And I would go so far as to say some of these go beyond just being a misconception, because that's kind of watered down. You know, it doesn't sound like it's anything that's like really that bad for you. You know, it's kind of like a candy bar that has, you know, 18% of your daily value of saturated fat. And, oh, okay, like how bad can that be? Whereas if you looked at the wrapper and the nutritional label and you went, whoa, that's got 98% of my daily value of saturated fat, maybe I'll find something else. Well, a misconception can sometimes feel like, oh, well, you know, it's 18%. Well, you know, how big of a difference can it make? But added up over time, those misconceptions can become truly devastating, if not for us, for other people. So what's the first common misconception that we have about what causes people to change? The first is information. Now, to be certain, if we are going to change, we need to have some information, either about why or how or when to do it. If I want to change my eating habits, for example, and my goal is to have a more nutritious diet, and I have no clue how to make that happen, I'm going to need some information. If I find that I'm constantly in the same pattern of conflict with someone in my life, I probably need some information to be able to understand what's causing this conflict. So it's not a matter that we don't need information. The misconception is when we think that information is all that we or someone else needs. You know, it was interesting. I heard a study recently where these people had been told by their doctor, if you don't make some changes to your lifestyle now and what you're eating in terms of your movement and your exercise, you are going to die. And this wasn't like, well, okay, you know, sure, 50 years from now. I was like, no, as in the next couple of years, you will be gone. All right, people will be walking by your tombstone, not by you. And out of these individuals who all received the same information, do you know what percentage actually made the changes? About 20%. 20% made the changes, and about the other 80 just didn't. Yes, they needed the information, but they needed far more than the information. And too often, we think that all we need is information. If I could just get enough data, then somehow that would translate into motivation. Or we especially think that when it comes to other people. Well, I'm just going to give this information, and then once they have that understanding, then they are going to change. And when people don't change after we have amply supplied them with information, then our response to that often is just frustration. I mean, what's with this person? I gave them the information. They're not acting on it. I mean, come on, get with it. Let's go here. Well, information alone is never enough. It's needed, but it's not enough. It's like if I'm going to mix up a chocolate pie. Okay, I need a crust. I'm going to need some chocolate filling. I need all of that. But is that going to be enough? No, I'm going to have something to bake it in. I can have the crust and I can have the filling. But if I have no oven that is working to bake that chocolate custard pie in, all I have are a bunch of mixed together ingredients, and assuming there's a bunch of eggs in there, that you can't just eat raw. So sometimes when we feed people information, it's kind of like we're giving them a bunch of ingredients, and they might even get mixed together and poured into the proverbial pie shell. But that is not enough to cause and bring about change. What's the second thing the second misconception that we have about change? And this one, I will say, is far more than just a misconception. This one is a dangerous belief. And the second one is the idea that change occurs after a person, quote, hits rock bottom. This has caused tremendous harm to individuals. And let me explain to you why. First of all, there is no rock bottom. Okay, it doesn't exist. The reality is a person can spiral downward and downward and downward and downward until, I guess you might say, the ultimate rock bottom of death. But other than death, there is no rock bottom because a person can continue to spiral downward, if not in behavior, at least in mindset. So it's not like there's this fixed place that if a person gets to that low level, all of a sudden has some power that prompts someone to change. It does not exist. And this idea causes real harm in two ways. First of all, it causes harm to people who have an awareness that they need to change. They may even have some desire to change. But what can keep them from actually taking the steps to change is to keep this, well, I guess when I hit rock bottom, that's when all of a sudden all of this massive amount of internal motivation is going to come exploding through my body somehow, and like it's just going to transform me. That typically is not how change occurs. To be certain, there are times that someone can have an experience where things come together and it comes together in such a way that that's when they say, okay, this is it. This is where I draw the line. This is where I am going to go and get help. But it's not this magical kind of rock bottom place. It's really in the mind when someone decides, I don't want to live this way anymore. This is not who I'm going to be. This is not how I'm going to take ownership of my life. This is not how I'm going to show up in the world. But when we continue to have this narrative, well, you know, a person just has to hit rock bottom. We really set people up for this idea that somehow they have to just get to this certain place where when it gets to be bad enough, there's going to be this intrinsic motivation that's going to be released. Kind of like at rock bottom, there's like some sort of switch and all of a sudden it's going to turn on this intrinsic motivation that somehow a person hasn't been able to find up until this point. That is not what happens. The reality is plenty of people hit what we might look at as rock bottom and they never get up again. That relationship does not survive. That opportunity does not survive. That person does not survive. We need to get this rock bottom narrative totally out of our thinking, out of our language, and out of our culture. It also does harm to people who are in some sort of relationship with, no matter how close or how distant, with somebody else who clearly does need to make some changes in their life. Because when we continue to use this narrative, well, I guess they just haven't hit rock bottom yet. Well, I guess when they hit rock bottom, things will change. Well, I guess I just kind of have to wait until they hit rock bottom. What? Where did this come from? No. And so what that can do is it can either excuse us from taking steps to help someone, or even if that is not what we need to be doing, it fosters a mentality within us that we're just kind of helpless over here, that we have no power to influence. And there is a difference between having the power to influence someone and the false narrative that we have the power to change anyone. Sometimes what we do is, you know, when we realize, okay, I can't change someone, I can't control someone, that's true. But that doesn't mean that we swing to the other side of the pendulum and negate the fact that we do influence other people, though. So this whole narrative about there being this rock bottom, and that's some sort of place that a person has to get to before this intrinsic motivation to turn their life around somehow gets released, this is a devastating, destructive mentality and language, and we just need to get rid of it. Instead, what happens is a person decides to change when they want the benefit of something new more than whatever the benefit is that they are getting in their current situation. Because here's the truth. No matter how awful and miserable and painful a person's situation is, unless you are truly in an extreme situation where you are living in, say you're living in a country where there is absolutely no freedom, or maybe you are living in prison, the reality is that there are things that we always can change, even if it's about our mindset and our attitudes. But when we stay in these systems and in these habits, no matter how painful they are, here's the thing. If we stay in them, there's some sort of payoff to it. It might not be evident to other people, and it might not be even be evident to ourselves, but every single pattern of behavior that we remain in, there's a payoff to it. And until we decide that the benefit or even the potential benefit of a different way of showing up, a different pattern, a different system, a different mindset, different habits, different routines, until we decide that those benefits mean more to us than the benefit of whatever we're currently getting, we're not going to change. So we don't need to wait for ourselves or somebody else to hit some phantom place called rock bottom before we make the choice to change. Okay, what's the third way that we often think that people change? And it really turns out to be very destructive. It is the word shame. Now, culturally, we've seen this pretty wide swing from, at one time, it was an incredibly shame-based culture, to now where it's like shame has become like there's no room for, not an unhealthy kind of shame, like there's nothing to be ashamed of. Like, hey, whatever I want to say, whatever I want to do, however I want to behave, however I want to show up in the world, hey, as long as it's me, there's absolutely not to be any shame attached to any kind of behavior. Well, that's just ridiculous. But there is a difference in recognizing behaviors and mindsets and things that we engage in that ultimately bring about shame or shameful consequences because we're not living aligned with the way that God has designed us, and being motivated by shame, thinking that, you know, if I can just shame myself enough, then I'm going to change. If I can just berate myself enough every time that I step on that scale, then I'm going to be motivated to not eat that candy bar at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when I'm tired and my blood sugar is down and it's sitting right there on the bowl on my kitchen counter or on my desk or in the break room at work. Okay, we are not going to say no to the 3 o'clock candy bar because we shame ourselves into it. That doesn't mean shame doesn't have power. Shame is one of the most powerful forces there is in the human existence. And can it be motivating? Yep, it can be. But here's the catch. For a while, it is not sustainable in the long term if you want to be a healthy person. Now, if you want to be an unhealthy person, or you want to raise unhealthy kids, or you want to have unhealthy relationships, then shame away. Because you can be incredibly motivating to yourself or to somebody else, but it is going to come at a cost of relationship. It's going to come at a cost of joy, of peace, of acceptance, and ultimately, it's going to come at a cost of growth. It will cap your growth and your ability to change because we are not wired to change based on nothing but berating and shame. That does not mean that there are no shameful behaviors. The Bible is very clear that there are behaviors and there are thought processes that we should feel a sense of shame with. But the difference is that when we do that, that is conviction. So it's like God's warning system to say, hey, you're not aligning here with how I've designed you to function. And so then the call is to come back into alignment. It's not to say, okay, therefore, let's just keep adding on more and more shame, because then eventually you're going to work yourself into a place of grace and wholeness. No, the shame is designed to lead us to repentance, not to just stockpiling more and more shame. This is a mistake that parents often make, and it is to think, if I just let my kid know how bad their behavior is, if I just make them feel badly enough about how they're behaving, then they're not going to want to act that way. Now, here's the thing. It might work with some kids for a while in terms of behavior modification, but we should never be after simple behavior modification, either in our own lives or in the lives of our children. What we want is heart change, not just external modification. But to be certain, it is always easier, whether we are dealing with ourselves or kids or somebody else, to just look at behavior modification than it is to look at the heart. But when we do the harder and the better thing, we and everybody else around us comes out so much better. You know, recently I had someone who asked me about a child who was being unkind, you know, to an animal. And this was totally out of character for this child. And the normal response, you know, in situations like that often would be to just get onto the child and just tell them how bad their behavior was and how wrong that was and how they shouldn't do that. And they should just feel terrible about that. And that might stop that child for a while, but it's not going to give the parent any clue as to what's prompting that behavior. And it's also not going to teach the child self-awareness for them to have to be a little bit more aware, to learn to be aware of why they are acting the way they are. And then later on, there was a conversation that this child had with their parent. And that's when the child, it was a very young child, by the way, but the child identified and recognized that they were feeling jealous because of the amount of time that the parent had been spending with this family pet. Now, that is huge. That's the kind of self-awareness that can clue, first of all, it begins to develop self-awareness in that child to be attuned to, this is what's prompting my behavior. It also can attune the parent in to, okay, this is what's going on into the heart of the child and not just the external behavior. Now, does the behavior need to be addressed? Of course, you don't just say to a kid, hey, okay, go ahead, you know, just be as mean as you want to the animal. Of course we don't do that. But it's like what I said at the beginning with information. Do we need information to change? Absolutely. But by itself, it's not enough. There are behaviors that we need to address with our children or ourselves, with a coworker, with an employee, and in any number of different settings that we might be in. There certainly can be behaviors that we have to address. But if we stop at the behavior, then we're not really going to have the kind of long-term change that we really want to be looking for, and that's heart change. So we want to get curious, and we want to look to see, okay, we have the information, but we need more than that. Okay, so we're going to be talking a little bit more about change in a little mini series here, but three things that we want to be aware of, and a couple of things that we want to stop doing, we want to stop talking about, we want to change our mindset about. Number one, information is necessary, but it's insufficient. It takes more than information for ourselves or anybody else to change. Number two, get rid of the idea that rock bottom is what fuels change. It doesn't. And number three, We need to move away from using shame as a way to motivate change, because not because it's not effective, if you want to look at it in the sense of behavior modification, but it's not effective in terms of heart modification. All right, my friend, that's going to wrap us up here for today. Hey, if you haven't already, hop over to the website, stephaniepresents.com. Sign up for High Impact, my weekly newsletter. And while you are there, check out the speaking engagements that I offer. And I have some of those topics listed on the website. You can kind of get an idea of some of the different topics that I do speak about, do for women's events and also for parents. But I always am open to request for custom topics. Maybe you are part of a church, or you're part of a school or a homeschool group, and your community has a particular need. Reach out. Let's chat about it. I always commit that I'm not going to speak on something that I'm not qualified and capable for. So it's not a matter that I'm going to speak on. I mean, like, I'm not coming to teach you how to make a chocolate custard pie, right? Not because I can't, but that is not my wheelhouse. But anyway, thank you so much for being here. And remember this, you have an impact that is immeasurable, eternal, and irreplaceable. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening. Visit the website, stephaniepresents.com, and sign up for High Impact to join the mission of building spiritually strong, emotionally healthy, and relationally smart women and families. You can also book Stephanie to speak at your event and check out additional resources. Together, we can invite and equip generations to engage fully in God's grand story.